Summer is almost here, and you can now get almost anything you need delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? You can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get chicken parmesan delivered. Sunshine? No. Some wine? Yes. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. See app for details.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Before we start, a warning. The following content will contain references to suicide and may not be suitable for young or vulnerable ears. As part of a series to highlight the mental health impact on a young person who has lost a parent to suicide, I'm joined in studio by Gráinne and Ali Clark. Gráinne and Ali lost their dad, Frank, to suicide almost 20 years ago when he was only 49 years old and the girls were 12 and 9 and their sister Gemma only 5. Gráinne and Ali, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Gráinne, we'll start with you. Will you describe to us what your dad was like before he died?
Dad was always a very lively and vivacious kind of person. He was the life and soul of the party, kind of the clown, if you wanted to say. You know, he was always the person that my friends would go, oh, we're going to Gráinne's house. This is great. Frank will be there and he's going to tell stories. And he was always really invested and involved in making sure that we had fun at every occasion.
Now, he came from a big family himself.
He did. There was a lot of kids in the family. Yeah. So he was kind of always had that kind of personality. You know, he was always the funny one, even when he was in his teens and in his early 20s.
Now, what about you, Ali? What is your recollection?
Very similar. I mean, he was the class clown of every event. Like, I have not as many memories as I'd like to have, but the ones that I do have, he's, you know, dressed up as one of the Spice Girls, or he was carrying water guns around campsites and shooting at cars with water guns. Like, he was really a bubbly character. And definitely, like Gráinne said, he was someone that drew young people in. As he'd tell stories at our parties and interactive games and things. He was really involved in everything. Just one of those kind of court jesters.
Now, are all the memories positive? Because, I mean, as we shall discover, he had an illness.
No, they weren't all positive. There's a lot of very negative memories as well, which it kind of took a long time to work through those kind of ones. You know, obviously you lose somebody so young, you kind of put them on a pedestal and that memories, it's all these really good ones. And then as time goes on and as you actually really kind of talk about them as you grow up, you realise, oh, okay, so there was actually a lot of negative memories there too. So that kind of, I don't know for you, but for me, it was definitely something that I had to work through myself as I got older, that he wasn't this person that my brain had made him out to be. Because obviously he did have an illness and there was an awful lot of negatives and scary moments.
Yeah, similar. I suppose you have this kind of bright picture because your brain will naturally just kind of remember the good bits and try and actively eliminate the bad bits when you're young. But as you get older, and especially as you transition through kind of life periods on your own, you kind of get these flashes coming up. And it's then, like Gráinne said, trying to work through those emotions. And it's almost like the relearning of your own memories and your own past. So there's definitely negatives. And like you said, you know, we're aware that there was an illness behind that. But still, you know, as a young person is trying to kind of get through
sure.
that.
But as children, were you told by your mum, for example, that your dad had an illness when he became something other?
Yeah, mum was very open, as we kind of noticed as we got older, because he was that very bubbly character pretty much all of our, or at least my very childhood memories. It was kind of more maybe in the last 4 years that I really noticed that kind of illness. Like, I mean, he'd always have angry moments or he'd be kind of scary. Any child who has somebody yell at them will think that about anybody. Do you know what I mean? But I do know, like, in the last kind of 4 years of life when he really struggled a lot, mum being a lot more open then, I think she was kind of thought we'd be able to understand a bit when you can kind of more visualise it and see it.
Did she give you a word for it?
She did. She used depression and bipolar. I mean, we didn't understand what that meant. She used, like, the big person, the grown-up words to kind of explain, and she would like tell us, like, dad's hasn't been out of his room in a few days, there's a reason why, and we're just going to let him take his time and we're going to be a bit quiet now. And, you know, she would explain why we might go out after school and play in the playground instead of going home, like we would have done a few days beforehand.
Now, Ali, you were a bit younger. Did you have an understanding of his illness too? Or do you remember much?
I don't remember much of talking about it. I know like those things would have been there and they would have been present. But I do remember a lot of, you know, we lost your dad long before we actually lost your dad. And I do remember understanding that to the extent that a young person can. And it wasn't held as a secret from us.
Yeah. What do you remember of that terrible day when you lost him?
Oh, I can tell you minute by minute. It's like a nightmare. But I guess you can start from the beginning. So it was actually our cousin's birthday. Well, the next day is our cousin's birthday, but it was her...
The party.
So we went down to Carlow. We drove down to Carlow. And I remember being given the option to stay at home or go if we wanted. And I love my mum's family. So I was like, I want to go to a party. And that's something that stuck with me for a lot of years afterwards, the choice I made. And I know now as a grown up, it was nothing to do with me. You know, this he had tried before. It wasn't his first attempt. So, but yes, we went to Carlow and it's obviously when we got back that like it all kind of kicked off. So I remember getting out of the car and mum went and she opened the front door and we were getting our little sister out of the car and she just came back out and she closed the door and she just goes, can you go across to Marion's across the road? It's our neighbour. And I was like, yeah. She goes, can you bring your sisters across the road? So I was like, okay, I'll do that. Which I thought was weird because it's about 7 or 8 o'clock at night. I was like, we don't usually go over to their house ever. Why are we? Well, I did what I was told. Went over to her house. Marion opened the door. And I don't know, there must have been some sort of eye contact over our heads or something because Marion just instantly was in the door, closed it. You know, we went into the living room. Her blinds were kind of part way down. I don't know why I remember this, but I do. I remember sitting there and we had an echo bar. It's the weird things that you remember from a child's memory. We had an echo bar. And I remember sitting there watching TV with her son and the girls. And then I remember an ambulance coming up outside our house and Marion rolling down the blinds so that we didn't see it.
Yeah.
So I'd say it was another maybe 2-3 hours there. And then the doorbell rang and Paul came to get us, who is now our stepdad. He was our dad's friend and my mum's friend. He came to get us and brought us across the road. And I remember thinking, this is very weird. It's like, why is Paul here? But didn't really question it. Went into the house. My aunt was there. I was like, why is she here? We just saw her. You know, like she was just at the party. There was no reason for her to be here.
So she had come up from Carlow in the meantime?
No, she lived around the corner.
Oh, okay.
Well, in Bray, around the corner. And I remember going into the sitting room. Mum was sitting there and she had like red eyes. She was crying. All that. She sat us down. Paul sat with her. My aunt sat with her. And she just told us that Dad had taken his own life.
She told you that on the day?
She told us that on the day. Which I remember talking to her about it and she was like, oh, I don't know if I should have told you that. And I was like, at the time, we wouldn't have understood what it meant anyway. But there was no hidden anything from the beginning. It was always from that moment.
Just reminding ourselves you were 12 at that
stage. We were 12.
Stage.
I was 12, she was 12.
Ali, what do you recall of that time?
Significantly less detail. I think just that little bit younger, the mind kind of blanks out a lot. There's images from it and it's mostly just flashes of images. I do remember sitting down with our mom. I remember her telling us the truth of what had happened. And I remember little flashes in ambulance. I remember a lot of questions in my head as a young person. I don't really remember what happened. I just remember a lot of the questions that were coming into my head and the images that were coming up. But I definitely remember her telling us straight out. And I remember understanding that. I think our younger sister was only 5. To be honest, actually took her years to kind of gather it because we all knew and we didn't realise she hadn't understood fully. But being 9, I was old enough to understand and she didn't try to make it a secret.
Did you understand at that moment that it was final, that he would not be back?
I think I did. I'd been through his last attempt. So it was like the August beforehand. So like just over 6 months beforehand. So I'd been through that. I'd been through the...
And were you told during that attempt that he had attempted to take his life?
Not that I recall. I could tell something was weird. I mean, we stayed at my grandmother for a week. And like going to visit my dad in the hospital, he was weird. I remember thinking that, like he was very emotional and very, very emotional. So I obviously knew something was wrong. And then those kind of like 7 months or whatever in between, he was different.
And for you, Ali, did you understand the finality of it on the day?
I want to say yes and no. Yes, I understood, but also, no, I mean, I was having dreams for probably years afterwards and imagining or, you know, daydreaming he'd come home or whatever. So there was a sense of, yes, I knew it was over. But at the same time, I was kind of like that hopeful, magical thinking of a young person wishing it into reality that he'd be back again.
Now, going through your teenage years into adulthood, how did it impact upon you? I mean, now that you're, I won't say through it, because you're never really through it. It's living with you all the time.
Different times and different steps in your life, for
but
sure.
But when you look back on it, what was the impact?
I definitely think, obviously, the initial first couple of years, it was like horror in a way. You know, you live through it every day and it hits you over and over and over again. You do things like your first Christmas without them, your first birthday without them. I graduated from primary school 2 months later and I remember everybody having their parents there and that was heartbreaking. I had my mom and my grandma and then I kind of just got used to it. But then it hits you again when you have a big birthday, like your 18th, or I graduated from secondary school. And again, it was my mom and my grandma, which is incredible to have her still like going to all these graduations. But it hits you when you see everybody with their parents, or when I started college. And it really hit me, I think, when I started college. I developed a really bad anxiety disorder and was scared to leave the house at points. I nearly dropped out of college. It hit me really hard at that point. I think my mum saved me in the way that she took me out one day and she drove me to college and she got me an apartment out there. And I think that kind of, I almost needed that separation.
Kind of sink or swim.
Yeah. And I think had I stayed at home and I still did that, I would have definitely dropped out. The anxiety would have kind of taken over. But that, like, stepping out of that house and being told, you got to do it. Yeah, there's no choice. I think that helped a lot in that anxiety disorder, but it definitely didn't stop it.
Ali, how about you?
Similar. I suppose there's two aspects to kind of entering adulthood after that. It's, you know, there's the emotional side that Grainne's already mentioned about. You hit those milestones and you're missing that person. And it's not that you stop missing them, but you do get used to it. Like at this point, you've had so many birthdays, you've had so many events. I mean, we haven't had any weddings yet, and I think that'll be a big one. But until that point, you know, you do get accustomed to it. But it's also the practical elements of becoming an adult without your father there. You know, there's financial concerns. There's everything our mother went through. You know, she had three kids on her own, and that put a huge emotional burden and financial burden on the family. So there's things that people don't necessarily think about when it comes to talking about suicide. There's the emotional, which is enormous. Obviously, like Grainne said, it's a horror show. But there's also all the practical elements that really affect you. You know, this is a weird thing to say, but we could have grown up into, you know, a very middle class, you know, our dad had a good job, but instead we had a single parent family with three kids and our mom did a fantastic job, but it does put a different strain. And growing into adulthood with all of those slightly bigger challenges than we would have had, I look back and I think, oh wow, that affected us in ways beyond our mental health, which obviously all three of us lived through our difficulties with that, but also in our financial and our well-being and just kind of other elements that you wouldn't necessarily think about at first glance.
And in terms, you mentioned your own mental health, how did you react?
Quite poorly, as I think any young person would. Our mom was great. She got us very quickly into therapy in Bernardo's, which was huge. I struggled with different versions of kind of mental health. And eventually in my early 20s was diagnosed with bipolar disorder myself, which, knowing our family history and all of that, that was a massive thing to kind of swallow as well. But I definitely think, like, with bipolar disorder, there's a lot about trauma being kind of an impulse for that. So I think there's a lot that's related there. As much as there's genetics involved, there's also that early trauma kind of can kickstart it. So yeah, we've all really had our own experiences of our mental health. That's very much, we can link it back. But we've also all kind of gone to counselling, gone to therapy, psychotherapy, psychiatrists, all the things that we need to do because we grew up kind of without that stigma. We weren't afraid to access help when we needed to, which I think if there's any benefit, it's that we've learned that you need to get the help that you need to get.
What about how early you get the help? Would it have helped if you'd got it earlier?
I think so. I wasn't ready through most of the attempts my poor mother made. Like, we went to Bernardo's and I was tuned out. I don't remember much of the time with them. I was kind of not capable at that point in time to listen to my own thoughts. I just wanted it all to be quiet. And through the years, my mum tried many attempts. Like, a couple of times during my teen years, I remember physically walking out of one and walking home and left my mum there. It wasn't until I had kind of a breakdown when I was in my mid to late 20s that I really got the help I needed. And I was in therapy then for about 4 or 5 years, like intense, two times a week for the first while. A week after that, was still doing it during COVID, which I think really helped. Had I accepted it younger, I don't know if it would have been any different, but I like to think that if I accepted it younger, I think I would have been able to tackle everything that hit me in my 20s a lot easier.
What was the turning point that made you accept therapy?
Weirdly, it was our stepdad sitting me down. Like, I'd heard it from mum so many times. And like, mum would obviously, we'd sit down and we'd talk about it and we'd get like emotional on both of our sides. And I never dealt well with emotion back then. I used to say that I didn't like to cry. I didn't like to show emotion. I didn't want it to happen. I didn't like it. So I'd start and then I'd just get angry because I was angry at myself for getting emotional. But it was one day that Paul sat me down and he said, "You need to get help." As he's like, "You're not okay." And I was like, I don't know why, coming from somebody maybe one step removed, yeah. Or it was maybe that he'd never broached it before. And I felt like, oh, if he's seeing it and he's saying it, then something really has got to give. And it was then going into therapy and like realizing when my own trigger signs were, when I needed space, when I needed to talk to somebody, when I needed to cry. I used to just use like sad videos on TikTok or Instagram to like cry because I didn't know how to. I think all of these years therapies made me feel like if I have to cry, I have to cry. If I have to scream, I have to scream. You know, I know how to like talk about everything that's inside my head now.
Ali, your own journey then, you know, you were diagnosed with bipolar, which must have been a bit of a shock.
I think it was. Somehow, you know, I've been dealing with some mental health things and me and my mom, neither of us twigged that it was, it's the same thing, because we knew it was genetic, but neither of us twigged until I was in an appointment to see what was going on with me. And the psychiatrist made it very clear that this was very much what it was. And there was a lot afterwards of dealing with fear, I suppose, because we had seen the end my dad had come to and we had grown up knowing that was his sickness. That was the bipolar. It wasn't him.
But he, before that terrible day, he had stopped taking his meds.
He had. He had been on lithium, which at the time was kind of one of the only treatments available. Mm. Things have changed, but it was one of the only ones really available. And it doesn't work for everyone. And it has some strong side effects for some people. And for him, it had some very strong side effects that he just couldn't really accept. And I think the thing with bipolar is it can be kind of tricky in that the manic side where you feel up and high and energetic, it can be really sad for someone to lose that. You also lose the terrible depression, but you lose that part of you that would have been that vivacious personality that we knew so well of the life of the party. On medication, you're not that anymore. So you also have to do a whole acceptance and grieving process of the version of you you thought you were. And I think that's, knowing now what it feels like, I think that's probably part of it, that he had lost who he thought he was. And found a new version of him that perhaps he didn't like or couldn't accept at the time. But indeed, he wasn't on his medication, and it's a very different experience with bipolar, whether you're medicated or not medicated.
Or it was not the same 20 years ago. Like, going to the doctor and saying all this, he wasn't listened to. He was told to get out more and go for more walks. And you're kind of going, that's not what he needs. So it just, the same understanding just wasn't available.
So once you got this diagnosis, but a more kind of understanding environment in which you got the diagnosis, dealing with the post-traumatic stress disorder, which lingered, besides the bipolar element, you had two challenges.
Yes, it was a journey, and it was not an easy journey. I have to say, now I live a relatively normal life. I have support, I have medication, it all works, but it's a really long process of trial and error to get there. So while you're dealing with the physical and chemical elements of bipolar, and then also trying to deal with all the kind of the trauma that comes along with getting the same diagnosis that killed your parent, which I'm sure I'm not the only person to experience. It was very complicated, but I was very, very lucky that our family already understood and understood to a very intrinsic level what it's like to live with someone with bipolar. So they were incredibly supportive. And I had extended family, like my aunt, who's a doctor, who was, I mean, I don't know how I would have gotten as far along with treatment as I did without her. So I was very lucky to have that support system who really, really knew where bipolar could go if you didn't have that kind of support. So I think without that, I wouldn't have made it through. And I'd say now I live a really normal life, but it was not easy to get there.
We mentioned at the very beginning your younger sister, Gemma, and she was very young when all of this happened. But I'm sure there still has been something of an impact. How is she today?
She is doing well, but like us, has gone through it, really. Ups and downs and her own struggles, both to kind of understand the event, because she was so young when it happened that the version of reality that you create can be really skewed. So you almost have to relearn what happened, which is exactly what happened with her. But also, like us, you know, there's mental health challenges that come with dealing with trauma and rehashing it out through your entire life. So she's She does really well now. She's really established, but she definitely had a hard time like us. And thankfully, we've been quite close as a family. So we have talked about all of these things and we've really been support systems for each other.
That old saying, time heals. It's coming up to 20 years, fully healed, partially healed.
Constantly dealing. Yeah, I feel like better. Like we were saying earlier, it hits you at different times. It hits you at different steps. The same way, I guess, anybody who's lost a parent and there's big milestones. And definitely, yeah, I don't know if it ever gets better. I think you just keep moving forward. And when it hits you, we just talk to each other.
Ali?
I'd agree. I don't think you ever heal. I don't think you ever heal from losing anybody that you love. But there's something about suicide that it's a very complex form of healing. You have sadness that you've lost someone that you loved. You have anger that person chose. And I know that, I mean, that's a very complex situation. He was unwell, all of those things. But as a person that was subjected to that, there's huge fluctuations between sadness, anger, acceptance, all of those different things. And I'm not really sure there's ever a final acceptance at the end. I think you just cycle through those big emotions to varying degrees, depending where you are personally in your life.
Yeah, it definitely feels like you cycle through them, because sometimes I'll be sad and she's so angry. And it's kind of hard then to really kind of get through to each other on those kind of times when one is just so angry and the other person just needs to talk it out.
The fundamental question that young people in this situation often ask themselves, how could the person be so cruel as to deprive us of their presence? Mm-hmm. And you have to resolve that.
You do. Yeah. I suppose I've had a unique experience of that, given that I now have lived through a version of what he lived through. While they're always going to be different. And that's question is still there. You know, everyone always told us, external people, but he was suffering so much and all of those things. And I think my anger, and I've had anger for a lot of years, because no, I'm there and I couldn't do that to my family. But I suppose we've been the victim of that. We've been on the other side of that. I've seen what it does to a family. Mm-hmm. And he had not seen that. So I know from speaking to our mom, like, there was definitely a sense from him that we'd be better off. Now, I know we would never. There's definitely no part of me that thinks we're better off without him. He was a fantastic father and whatever your struggles are. But having lived through that as a young person, having watched our mom, his friends, his family going through that and all of the trauma that everyone around him suffered, I think that question will always be there, because I haven't been able to go to where many people do, which is, oh, he was suffering so much. Like, I know he was suffering so much, but now we are suffering so much. So there's, I know it sounds maybe ununderstanding. Like, I don't have an understanding of it, but I think it's from an understanding of it that I know no family is better off without their family member. Definitely not. And as much as that hurts to have to accept that as someone who's living through any kind of a mental health crisis, it's also really important for people to realise no one is better off without their loved one. Most certainly not.
Grania?
I have a slightly different way that I think about it. Not that I'm like, we would have been better off without him, but my head always seems to go to, but what would have happened after? I mean, he was so unwell and he was just getting worse and worse and worse. And I remember a lot of the angry dad, that kind of like monster guy. Like, I remember when he'd come home from work and you'd kind of be sitting there and you'd go, I don't know who's going to come through that door. Is it going to be the dad who's really fun and is going to tell me a nice story to go to bed? Who's going to tuck me in? Who's going to make me laugh? Who's going to let me do fashion shows of the stuff I bought that day in the shops? Or is it going to be the one that's scary? And if I do something slightly wrong, I go to bed with that dinner. Okay, obviously it's horrendous. I would never want anybody to lose their parent in any way, shape or form, especially not the way we did. But sometimes I kind of sit there and I'm like, if he hadn't, who would we be now? Who would he have been? Like, what, our parents have separated? Would we ever have seen him? Would we have had to live with him sometimes? And then we wouldn't have had a buffer of mum. You know, these kind of things kind of cycled through my head with all this guilt after it, because thinking, I should want him back. I should want it different. But it's, yeah, it's a difficult one to...
You are two most remarkable women, I have to say. To have processed all of this and to be so rational about it, even though you've had your struggles getting to this point. Do you have any words to young people who may be going through what you went through and are still going through all those years ago?
Therapy. a lot of therapy. That's just one thing that I will always say to people. Somebody you can talk to that's not your family. Because your family is great. Or we're lucky to have a family that was great to talk to. But having somebody who's not going to judge you, who's not going to say you can't say that. You know, that you just get all of that, everything off your chest. The anger, the pain, the grief, guilt, all of it off. And it's not going to judge you.
Ali.
Likewise, I think it's very important to look after your own mental health after something like that in any way that makes sense, like Rania said. And also to take time to process and be okay with the fact that those feelings are going to be so much more complicated than someone who lost their parent in a way that wasn't their own choice. It's not just grief. And I think that was very hard at the start. There were so many other emotions that I felt guilty, like Ryan's guilty for having these thoughts, guilty for having these feelings of maybe anger, maybe all of these things. I think it's really important just to realize that grief after suicide is a lot more complex. It needs to be dealt with by people who understand it. And you have to have a lot of self-compassion to go through those emotions and accept the emotions that are there. There's nothing wrong with having those emotions. Your grief is completely different than someone who lost their parent in any other way. So I suppose also talking to other people who've had a similar experience so that you can be really outright and just say those things in a place that's accepting. And most importantly, to accept your own feelings, that they are just feelings and that's okay. You're allowed to have them.
Ali and Gráinne Clark, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
If you or someone you know has been impacted by the content of that interview, you can contact 24-hour helplines for Pieta House on 1-800-247-247 or the Samaritans on 116-123. Our Losing a Parent to Suicide series is supported by the Rosalind Carter Fellowship for Mental Health Journalism in Ireland in partnership with Shine and produced by our senior producer and one of this year's fellows, Claire Darmody.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.